MyAudiobooks.ai presents When Common Disease Becomes the Orphan. In the early months of 2025, a team of physicians and scientists at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia and the University of Pennsylvania attempted something that had never been done, designing a gene editing therapy for a single patient, from scratch, fast enough to matter. The patient had been born with severe CPS1 deficiency, a disorder in which the body cannot safely process the nitrogen produced when it digests protein. Without intervention, ammonia accumulates in the blood and damages the brain. Estimates put early infant mortality for the severe form of this condition near 50%. The standard of care involved a severely restricted diet and medications that scavenge nitrogen from the blood. Management, not treatment, of a biochemical emergency written into every cell. The team's answer was audacious in its specificity. They would not design a drug for CPS1 deficiency. They would design a therapy for this child's particular mutation, a customized adenine base editor packaged in a lipid nanoparticle aimed at the liver, carrying a guide molecule matched to one patient's exact genetic error. Development began after the neonatal diagnosis. The therapy was designed and manufactured in roughly 6 months, reusing years of preclinical work on the delivery vehicle and the editing machinery. The child received 2 infusions at approximately 7 and 8 months of age.
What happened next, as reported in the New England Journal of Medicine, was real but carefully bounded. The child's dietary protein tolerance increased. The dose of the nitrogen scavenger medication was cut to half its starting level. No serious adverse events were reported in the short follow-up period, and the authors were explicit that longer observation is needed. No responsible person involved called it a cure. But something had been demonstrated that changes the arithmetic of medicine. A therapy for an audience of one had been built in months, from a platform designed to be rebuilt again and again for other audiences of one.
This article is about the uncomfortable inversion the demonstration points toward. For a century, the economics of drug development have followed an iron rule. Treatments flow toward the largest patient populations because the enormous fixed cost of development must be recovered across as many buyers as possible. The math is merciless and familiar to anyone who has watched a drug fail for business rather than scientific reasons. A therapy that costs $1 billion to develop and serves 10 million patients can be priced at $100 a course and still thrive. The same therapy, serving 100 patients, would need to cost $10 million each.
Rare diseases were orphans precisely because they were rare. No company could recoup that research from a few hundred patients, which is why governments invented orphan drug incentives in the first place. Artificial markets for diseases the real market could not see. The new platform logic suggests the old rule may be quietly inverting. The decisive variable may no longer be how many people share a disease name, but whether one editable lesion explains the disease. And under that rule, the patient inside a huge diagnostic category with a hopelessly distributed genetic architecture may be harder to reach than the patient who is nearly alone.
The thesis, stated plainly, is that programmable medicine may increasingly reward causal clarity over patient count, that an ultra-rare disorder caused by a single gene can now be technically tractable in a way that some common diseases, each affecting millions and driven by sprawling genetics, are not. This is a claim about technical tractability, not about cures, cures for all, or the end of common disease research. It may be wrong, but if it is even partly right, the word orphan is about to change its meaning, and health systems are pricing, regulating, and insuring for the wrong definition.
At myaudiobooks.ai, you can create your own audiobooks from prompts, turn your documents into audio, all with one subscription, and store your items in your own personal library.
To see why one mutation can be easier than a million patients,
it helps to understand what the Philadelphia team actually reused. Gene editing in the popular imagination is CRISPR, molecular scissors that cut DNA. The therapy used here was subtler, a base editor, a machine that rewrites a single letter of the genetic code without cutting both strands of the double helix at all. Think of the difference between tearing a page out of a book and correcting one typo with a pencil. The cut invites the cell's repair machinery to improvise with unpredictable results. The base edit makes one precise change and asks the cell to tolerate it. For a disease caused by one wrong letter, correcting that letter is, in principle, the whole job. The distinction matters more than it sounds. DNA is written in four chemical letters, and the most common class of harmful mutations is the point mutation, one letter swapped for another at one position. CPS1 deficiency, sickle cell disease, and thousands of other inherited disorders trace to such swaps. A tool that corrects single letters cleanly is therefore not a niche instrument. It is, at least in principle, a general-purpose answer to the largest single category of genetic error. The phrase, in principle, carries the entire weight of the field's next decade, because principle and practice in gene editing are separated by delivery, durability, immune response, and cost. All the things the platform is supposed to solve. The second component is delivery, and it is the unglamorous hero of the story. A lipid nanoparticle is a tiny sphere of fat, chemically cousin to a soap bubble, that can be loaded with genetic instructions and injected into the bloodstream, where it is naturally taken up by the liver. The liver is where CPS1 does its work, so a liver-seeking delivery vehicle built and safety-tested over years of earlier programs could be picked up off the shelf. The third component is the guide, a short molecule that tells the editor which address in the 3 billion-letter genome to visit. The guide is the only part that is truly patient-specific. Everything else, the fat sphere, the editor, the manufacturing process, the safety assays, is reusable. Engineers have a word for a system built from components that can be recombined. Modularity. A modular platform treats the vehicle and the editor as standard parts, and the guide as the configurable one. The Philadelphia case was not a moonshot built from nothing. It was the first public demonstration of a platform working as designed. And that is why researchers paid attention far beyond one rare disease. If the platform is real, then the marginal cost of the next patient-specific therapy is not another decade and another $1 billion. It is a new guide. The regulatory system has begun, cautiously, to acknowledge the same logic. In 2026, the Food and Drug Administration announced a plausible mechanism framework aimed at individualized therapies for ultra-rare diseases. The traditional drug trial, hundreds or thousands of patients, randomized, averaged, is mathematically impossible when the patient population is one. The framework contemplates master protocols and shared platform evidence. When a therapy targets a well-understood root cause, safety and manufacturing data gathered for one guide can help support the next. Platform papers in the genetics literature make the matching technical argument, describing umbrella trials in which the delivery vehicle and editor remain substantially shared while guide sequences vary by mutation, and arguing that manufacturing and regulatory evidence must be reused at the platform level if gene editing is ever to be sustainable rather than a series of heroic one-offs. Now turn to the other side of the ledger, the common diseases. Type 2 diabetes, coronary artery disease, schizophrenia, most cancers, Alzheimer's disease. These affect tens or hundreds of millions of people, and they attract the largest research budgets on Earth. They are also, genetically speaking, swarms. 2 decades of genome-wide association studies have shown that common diseases distribute their risk across hundreds or thousands of genetic loci, each contributing a sliver of susceptibility,
interwoven with diet, age, environment, infection, and chance. A polygenic risk score for a common disease is not a diagnosis. It is a shifting probability assembled from variants that individually do almost nothing and collectively do not determine anyone's fate. There is no single letter to correct.
There is no single pathway whose repair fixes the disease. The causal architecture is not a typo. It is weather.
This is why the phrase, "just edit it," fails so completely for common disease. Imagine a city whose traffic jams are caused not by one broken bridge, but by 10,000 slightly mistimed lights, each contributing a few seconds of delay. Retiming any single light does nothing measurable. Retiming all of them requires a model of the whole system that nobody has. Common polygenic disease is that city. The variants are real, their combined effect is real, and no one of them is a program. Scholars call a disease predominantly caused by a change in one gene monogenic. One gene, one error, one conceivable correction. The CPS1 case fits that pattern exactly.
The common diseases sit at the opposite pole. They are polygenic, shaped by many variants at once. And polygenicity is not merely more genes to edit. It is a different kind of problem. Editing one of 300 risk loci may shift disease risk by a fraction of a percent in the wrong tissue with unknowable interactions. The technology that is miraculous against a single causal lesion has no obvious target at all in a disease whose cause is distributed across the genome and the lifespan. Here is the inversion, stated as carefully as the evidence allows. The old question, how many patients does this disease have, answered the economics question, is there a market? The new question, does this disease have one editable cause, answers the technical question, is there a program? For the first time, the two questions can point in opposite directions. A 1-in-a-million disorder with a single editable cause can have a clean answer to the second question and a terrible answer to the first. A disease of 50 million people with a distributed architecture can have a magnificent market and no clean target at all. If programmability replaces prevalence as the first filter of therapeutic tractability, how readily a problem can be acted upon, then the new orphan is not the patient with the fewest peers. It is the patient inside a huge diagnostic category whose causal architecture is too distributed to patch. At myaudiobooks.ai, you can listen to this story and thousands of others that explore the hidden science and mechanics behind the headlines. The strongest case against this inversion deserves to be stated at full strength, because much of it is probably right. First, the Philadelphia case is one case, with short follow-up, enormous academic and philanthropic support, and no demonstrated commercial pathway. Drawing an economic law from a single heroic demonstration is exactly the mistake biotechnology has made before. Second, common diseases are not actually targetless. Many have high-leverage proteins and pathways, the cholesterol system for heart disease, the amyloid and tau pathways for Alzheimer's, the GLP-1 system for metabolic disease, and drugs that hit those bottlenecks help millions without editing anything. Third, single-gene rare diseases carry their own brutal difficulties that the platform story understates. Variable penetrance, inaccessible tissues like the brain, developmental damage already done before birth, immune reactions to the editor itself, and manufacturing constraints that do not disappear because the guide is cheap. Fourth, rare and common are not clean biological categories. The genetics of common disease routinely illuminates rare disease and vice versa, and pretending otherwise is rhetoric, not biology. All of that is fair, and the thesis survives only in a narrowed form. The claim is not that rare disease has become easy, cheap, or commercially solved. It is not that common diseases are hopeless. They are not,
and the bottleneck drugs prove it. The claim is about the first filter, the question a therapeutic program must answer before economics is even reached. Does this disease offer a causal target a programmable platform can act on? For a growing class of single-gene disorders, the answer is increasingly yes, and regulators are building lanes for that yes. For many common diseases with distributed causes, the honest answer remains no, not because of neglect or market failure, but because of causal architecture.
The orphan status is migrating from a property of the patient population to a property of the disease's explanation.
There is a further wrinkle, and it is the one that keeps platform optimists honest. Everything about the new economics depends on reuse actually being reusable. The entire inversion rests in a chain of fungibility, the degree to which one component can substitute for another. The delivery vehicle must be interchangeable across guides. The editor must be interchangeable across targets. The safety evidence must be interchangeable across patients. The manufacturing process must be interchangeable across facilities and batches. Each of those substitutions is a scientific and regulatory bet, not an established fact.
If the immune system reacts differently to each new guide, or if each new target tissue demands its own delivery vehicle, the platform dissolves back into a series of one-off demonstrations, and the old economics reasserts itself. The plausible mechanism framework is, at bottom, a regulatory wager that these substitutions will hold often enough to matter.
What would prove this article wrong? Three findings would disprove its thesis, and they are concrete enough to watch for. First, if personalized platform therapies remain one-off demonstrations over the next several years, if cost, manufacturing, or safety evidence proves genuinely non-transferable from guide to guide, then the inversion was a mirage and prevalence still rules. Second, if multiplex editing or pathway-level interventions mature to the point where common diseases with distributed causes become as programmable as single-gene ones, if the swarm becomes editable after all, then causal clarity stops being the scarce resource and the thesis loses its asymmetry.
Third, if long-term follow-up of the early cases shows the initial edits lack durability or produce late off-target or immune harms, the platform's evidentiary foundation cracks and the regulatory lane narrows again. Each of these is observable on a timescale of years, not decades.
It is worth pausing on what this article has not claimed. It has not claimed the Philadelphia child is cured. The published report claims improved protein tolerance and reduced medication, with explicit uncertainty about the long term. It has not claimed common diseases are neglected. They consume most of the world's biomedical research budget by a wide margin. It has not claimed gene editing is safe, affordable, or equitably available. The first platform therapies will be among the most expensive medical interventions ever delivered, and the question of who pays is unsolved. And it has not claimed that any child should be a symbol. The patient in this story has a family and a future that are not ours to narrate, and the science here is about systems, not about one small person's fate.
The deeper shift, if it comes, will be administrative before it is biological. Medicine has always organized itself around disease markets. Prevalence determines investment. Investment determines evidence. Evidence determines approval. Approval determines payment. A programmable platform scrambles every step of that chain. If the unit of development is no longer the disease, but the reusable stack, vehicle, editor, manufacturing line, then the rational object of regulation and reimbursement is the platform, and each new patient is an incremental deployment rather than a new product. No health system on earth currently prices, approves, or insures medicine that way. The FDA's framework is a first, tentative acknowledgement that the old categories are straining.
Which returns the story to the 6-month race. Somewhere in Philadelphia is a team that proved a therapy could be built for one person in less time than a typical drug spends in a single committee meeting. Somewhere else are millions of people whose diseases are written not as single errors, but as weather. Distributed, dynamic, uncorrectable by any single edit. Waiting on bottlenecks and pathways that have nothing to do with how many of them there are. The genome does not care about our markets, and the market does not care about our genomes. For 80 years, they at least pointed in the same direction.
The open question is which master the next generation of medicine will serve. If the platform holds, if the substitutions survive scrutiny, the guides stay cheap, and the safety evidence compounds, then the diseases that get treated first will be the ones with the clearest explanations, and the old orphan map will be redrawn around causal architecture instead of patient count. If it does not hold, the Philadelphia case will stand as a beautiful anomaly, proof that medicine can perform miracles when money is no object and the target is kind. Either way, the definition of the word orphan is now in play, and the patients who will live inside the new definition do not yet know which side of it they are on.
At myaudiobooks.ai, you can create fiction, nonfiction, and turn your documents into audio, all stored in one place with a single subscription. Plus, get instant access to thousands of audiobooks and deep dive investigations. Learn more today at myaudiobooks.ai. This concludes the audiobook narration. Thank you for listening.